Where I lived and why. By the time I found Bourne, I was entangled with Wick in so many ways. We were bound by our mutual safe place, the Balcony Cliffs, which existed on the northeast fringe of the city, overlooking the poisoned river. To the west, as the city sloped toward sea level, lay the territory of the magician. To the south, across Desolation and Oases both, the remnants of the company, protected by Mord. Much of all of this sprawled across a vast, dry seabed that extended into the semi-arid plain beyond the city. Wick had found the Balcony Cliffs and held them for a time without me, but only by inviting me in had he held on to that place. He provided his dwindling supply of biotech and chemical deceptions, and I provided a talent for building traps, both physical and psychological. Using Wick's blueprints, I'd reinforced or hollowed out the most stable corridors, and the rest now ended in hidden pits or floors strewn with broken glass or worse. I used a terrifying nostalgia, book covers with death's heads drawn on them, a bloody cradle never meant to break, a few dozen pairs of shoes, some with mummified feet still in them, the brittle remains of a dog-like animal that had wandered in and gotten lost hung from one ceiling, while the graffiti added to the wall opposite would haunt an intruder's nightmares, if they knew how to read. A horror show linked to Wick's pheromones and hallucinogens, activated by tripwire. Attacks had come and squatters tried their luck, and always we had fended them off. One route we'd made led to Wick's rooms, another to the stairs in the former lobby that granted access to a blind hidden near the top mulch. Another route came after subterfuge to the converted swimming pool where Wick stirred a vat of seething biotech creations like a mad scientist. And then from there to the cliff where lay the balconies that had given the place its name. From the center, near Wick's workplace, the lines in my head were drawn most urgently to the southern edge of the mound, which faced the company across the great broken divide of the city's southwest flank. The confusion deliberately multiplied, my purpose to create a maze for any unexpected visitors, before simplifying again at the exit to three passageways, only one of which led anywhere safe, and before that, the door, which from the outside appeared to just be a part of the mound, obliterated by an inspiration of moss and vines. A strong smell of carrion, one of Wick's most inspired distortion pheromones, grew unbearable closest to the door. Even I had trouble leaving by that entrance. Throughout the warren we had made of the Balcony Cliffs, there now existed allegiances that felt intimate. More intimate even than our sleeping arrangements. Corridors? Tunnels? Even those kinds of distinctions had been lost under our excavating rule and Wick's addition of special spiders and other insects. I kept track of my traps with a map, but Wick, company savvy, used a flounder creature in a shallow pan of water as his command and control, an ever-changing blueprint traced delicate across its back. At some point, just as our systems of defense had become entwined, so too had our bodies, and that had wrought an unexpected synergy. What had been created from extremes of loneliness, of need, had moved beyond mutual comfort into friendship, and then toward some amorphous frontier or feeling that could not be love, that I refused to call love. In weak moments, I would run my hand across his wiry chest and tease him about his pale, almost translucent skin against the deep brown of my thighs, and for a time, I would be happy at the hidden center of our Balcony Cliffs. It suited me that we could be lovers there and retreat to being mere allies in the aftermath. But the truth is, when we were together on those nights, I knew that Wick lost every part of himself and let himself be vulnerable. I felt this quite strongly, even if I might be wrong, and if I held back something from Wick because of it, still I let the balcony cliffs in, connected by something almost like lasers. These lines that radiated out from both of us surged from body and brain and through the rooms our talents kept safe. Sensors, tripwires, sensitive to touch and vibration, as if we lay always at the center of something important. Even lying there, beneath me, Wick could not be free of that connection. There was also the thrill of secrecy, for to preserve our security, we could not be seen outside together, left by different pathways at different times, and some of that thrill entered into our relationship. Anyone passing furtive far above us would have thought that underfoot, beneath the copse of sickly pines, lay only a vast midden, an old garbage dump with dozens of layers of crumbled girders, human remains, abandoned refrigerators, firebombed cars, crushed into a mulch that had a springy, almost jaunty feel. But beneath that weight lay us, lay the stalwart roof of the balcony cliffs and the cross-section of body that served as our home, the lines that connected a woman named Rachel to a man named Wick. There was a secret shape to it all that lived inside us, a map that slowly circled within our minds like a personal cosmology. This, then, is where I had brought my sea anemone named Bourne. Into this cocoon, this safe haven, this vast trap that took time and precious resources to maintain, while somewhere a ticking clock kept track of the time we had left. Wick and I both knew that no matter how much raw biotech material he'd created or bartered for, the beetle parts and other essentials he had taken from the company so long ago would run out. My physical traps, without Wick's almost uncanny reinforcement, would not keep scavengers out for long. Every day brought us closer to a point where we would have to redefine our relationship to the balcony cliffs and to each other. And in the middle of all routes, my apartment, where, pulled taut by our connections, we fucked, we screwed, we made love, equidistant from any border that might encroach, any enemy that might try to enter. We could be greedy there and selfish there, and there we saw each other fully. Or at least thought we did. Because whatever we had, it was the enemy of the world outside. That first night after I had brought Bourne into our home, we lay there in my apartment and listened to the remote, hollow sound of heavy rain smashing into the mossy surface far above. We both knew it was not real rain. Real rain in this city came to us ethereal and brief, and thus we did not venture out. Even real rain was often poison. We did not speak much. We didn't have sex. We just lay there in a comfortable tangle, with Bourne on a chair as far from us as possible in the corner of the bedroom. Wick had strong hands with fingertips worn almost smooth from his years of handling the materials that went into his vats of proto-life, and I liked to hold his hands. This is how far we had come, that we could be silent, and we could be still together. But even then, that first night, the presence of Bourne changed things, and I didn't know if part of the silence was because of that. In the morning, we peeked out through one of our secret doors to find the cracked earth writhing with the death throes of thousands of tiny red salamanders. So intricate, their slow questing limbs, their obsidian eyes, so much like a mirage, a mosaic of living question marks that had rained down from the darkened sky without meaning. And already to the west we could hear the rage of Mord and feel the tremor of his passage. Rage against this illogical rain, or against someone or something else? Once comets had appeared in the heavens, and people mistook them for celestial creatures. Now we had Mord and salamanders. What did they portend? What fate was the city working toward? Within minutes of the sun hitting their bodies, the salamanders dissolved into liquid, absorbed by the earth, so that only an off-red sheen, like an oil slick, remained behind, dotted with the tiny tracks of investigating animals. Wick did not seem much concerned about the salamanders, despite his need to replenish the supplies in his swimming pool. "Contaminated," he said, which I had known already from the look on his face.